Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club podcast where each week, three of us read up on a topic, then discuss it from geeky, nerdy perspectives. This week, I am your host, Colin Ketchin, and we will be discussing Dear White People. I have laid a minefield for myself, and we're going to walk through it. So,
I see how it is, Colin. I see how it is. On the episode on diversity, we had two white people, and now we got a white person leading the episode on oppression. I see how it is.
Okay.
To be fair, the show is called Dear White People, so it's kind of addressed to him.
It is addressed directly to me. I'm trying to be an ally, Chowder. Chowder.
Appropriating the movement. I see how it is.
Listen, I'm not appropriating shit. The creator of the show is also a Star Trek fan. There is shared blood. Nothing has been appropriated. This is a community, and I need you to support that.
I know you're joking, but like... Christ, that's awkward.
I am joined by two people, each of whom has selected a domain that they think connects to our topic and our theme this week.
Hi, I'm Taimul Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer, and I am going to be discussing Miss Marvel, the Kamala Khan version.
I am Genevieve Iyer. I don't have a nickname. And I will be discussing Get Out.
Get Out!
The 2017 horror satire film.
The episode normally starts by summarizing our topic and the domains before we openly discuss. We're going to close the podcast with a competitive rating section to determine who best contributed and whether today's topic is even enjoyable. So before we jump in, there's a lot of housekeeping to do. First things first, welcome to Cycle 10. We track the quote seasons, unquote, of our podcast by our entire cast. We have 8 cast members, and every time we go through all 8 hosting an episode, that's a cycle. We're in the 10th one. Welcome. You've made it. Other things to note. You'll notice that Genevieve is on the podcast. If you listened before, you may have heard her voice before, and we did not introduce her as a guest. As you may recall, one of our fellow podcast members was tragically struck down several episodes ago by the megalomaniacal Eddie Ryan. Austin Liebers is no longer with us, and Genevieve has volunteered to solemnly take his place. And we could not let Eddie's crime go unpunished. So for his dusting of Austin Liebers, Eddie has been banished to the Shadow Realm and will no longer be heard on the Comic Geeking program for his tragic acts.
I hope y'all are happy. We had to challenge him to a children's card game first. All right?
So, in his replacement, you may also remember Ryan Mossbarger, who was in an episode last cycle. He will be taking the place of our fallen hero, Eddie. We no longer have anybody to complain about the script writing on this scripted podcast that we script ahead of time. So, welcome to the family, Genevieve and Ryan.
Thanks.
Sorry, I wasn't pausing for effect. I had to swallow a bit of mucus in my mouth. So that's cute.
Swallowing mucus is the best way to greet family.
It is. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm doing great.
Yes. Chowder, you want to get on this phlegm action? It makes for great audio. So we have two new cast members. I'm very excited to have them as part of the show. And a couple other quick housekeeping things. We, behind the scenes, are going to be changing our hosting from SoundCloud to Podbean, and that should be beginning with, I believe, this episode. So any of you listening on SoundCloud, hello, come on over to iTunes or Podbean or something, so Apple Podcasts, and we'll get that squared away. So back to this episode, to wrap up the intro, we're talking about Dear White People today. And Dear White People, this is actually a listener selected episode. Every cycle we raffle off people who contribute to our social media stuff, and they get to pick an episode. This episode, I partnered with a listener named Faith Yoy. And we discussed a couple of things in current events that she wanted to talk about. And I've decided Dear White People is a topic I'm going to use as a vessel to discuss this stuff. We're going to be talking sort of with the lens of disenfranchised or minority communities, their representation in media, and the sort of support that I think Dear White People represents that I think is very positive, very interesting, and worth talking about. So that was a whole... I literally have a checklist on my iPad, and I've checked off every little bubble. So I'm officially done with this introduction. Do either of you want to say anything before I get to talk even more?
Shut up, colonizer.
That about wraps it up. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Common Geeking Program. The white person has been told not to speak, so the white person will not speak.
Points for efficiency. But if we did end it right here, you would be still the person who talked the most.
Mm-hmm.
and there's just no way to win.
Okay, okay. It didn't, okay.
There's no way to win this conversation.
He didn't say retcon. He did not say retcon colonizers. He said shut up colonizers, which I understand I'm still violating, but like... Who talked most is not of the most import right now.
Okay.
I just want to spend this episode roasting you, Colin.
Cool. Yeah, let's, yeah, fucking change the record. Jesus Christ. Okay, let's move on to the summary. Dear White People is a Netflix original series that has aired from 2017 until now. It has released two seasons, the second of which was released, I think, a couple of months ago. We're recording this in early July. Sorry about that. They have just been renewed for season three as of the end of June.
Damn right.
And I think an interesting fact about this is Rotten Tomatoes gives this show a 100% for both seasons, meaning all the critics who watched this show gave it a big old juicy tomato.
Neat.
Neat. And that I think that's an accomplishment. Season two is rated at 9.6 average, while season one is rated at 8.5. But we're mostly going to be talking about season one because that's the homework I assigned today. Dear White People is created by Justin Simmons, a Star Trek fan, who wrote and directed the film Dear White People in 2014. And this is based on that film with many returning cast members. The film has a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, so apparently the television show is some sort of improvement. The premise of the show is a fictional Ivy League school called Winchester, following a group predominantly comprised of black students who live in the... It's Armstrong Parker is the name of the house that they're in, and it is like a historically black house. So most of our perspective is from inside this sort of like rich, varied community that is a minority on the campus of Winchester. The format of the show is that each episode follows a different character. It's not quite like Arrested Development season 4's original cut, where it's like it all takes place in the same period of time, but you get different perspectives. It is chronological, but there is some overlap between episodes. I think the overlap is always fun, but following different characters works pretty well for an ensemble cast. But I want to talk about the characters, and here's where I want you guys to pitch in, because we got a few different characters to round out this cast, and I just want to get basic stuff out there. So I'm going to alternate between the two of you. I'm going to throw out a character. I want you guys to sum up that character as best as you can. All right, ready? Are you ready? Are you guys ready? I didn't prepare you for this, so you can't be ready.
Oh, no, I'm not ready. There.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Chowder, you're going to go first, because that's the order I picked earlier, even though okay. I so want to dunk on Jonavi not being prepared right now. First things first. Got a couple seconds on the clock. Our main character is Sam White. Chowder, tell us about Sam White.
Sam White is the main character. She runs a radio show titled Dear White People, where she just points out all the flaws in society that involve white people.
That's a long show.
She is a mixed race. Her dad's white, her mom's black, and yeah, that is something she struggles with. She is very vocal about whatever she finds wrong with the world, mostly, you know, racism and stuff.
Racism and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's some sexism thrown in. Let's be...
Yeah, sexism, exactly.
Come on. There's a lot of stuff to complain about.
I just like the and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, because right. You gotta get that intersectionality in there.
You put me on the spot here.
I did. I'm saying I like it.
So the and stuff covers that?
Okay, I guess that's fair. So, Jonavi, Lionel Higgins, who is he?
Lionel Higgins is a shy dude. He is the one who, at the beginning of the events in season one of Dear White People, like, leads a group of people to break up the blackface party, which sort of is the inciting incident on the campus. He works as a reporter for The Independent at Winchester. He aspires to someday win a Pulitzer. And yeah, he is quiet but passionate about the issues brought up by the show in general.
Also, he's a fucking nerd.
It's true.
He's a big nerd, and it adds another layer to how he is marginalized in various groups.
It does. Yeah. He's also of the main cast, the only gay character, which in a movie that's talking about like minorities and like minority communities, it adds like a whole extra perspective.
Yeah. Why you gotta, but we'll get in. Why you gotta make your gay character and your like single nerd character the same character?
They're people too.
I know.
I'm gonna edit that out. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Chowder, who is Troy Fairbanks?
Troy Fairbanks, he is the head of the BSU. He is he's basically like this Barack Obama kind of personality. He's always trying to like how do I describe it?
Schmooze?
Crap. My mind's going blank.
His papa is the dean of the college. He has a lot of pressure on him to be kind of like perfect, exactly. No mistakes man.
Yeah, exactly. He as others would describe him, he is kind of a tool who lives for the external validation of others and has no backbone when it comes to standing up to his own dad. He is kind of like the stereotype of the black dude who acts white.
Yeah.
Or at least acts differently depending on who's around him.
Gotcha. All right, Jonavi, can you tell me a little bit about Reggie Green?
Reggie Green was... I suppose our main character, Sam White's, like, love interest a little bit. He is a white dude.
Wait, no, Reggie... Isn't Reggie...
No, that's Gabe.
Oh, shit!
That's
Gabe. Gabe's the white dude. I'm a failure. I'm the worst. Okay.
Jonavi.
I told you I wasn't prepared. Reggie is a computer science student at AP.
Much like Sam, he is also very outspoken. You know, he's always standing up for whatever problems there are.
I think his biggest plot point I'll get to in a bit, but like as far as what he does other than his big plot point is he's sort of like part of a love triangle with Sam.
Okay,
Chowder, can you tell me just make it real short, do you know anything about Coco Connors?
She is at least when the series starts out, she is Troy's girlfriend. She is a very ambitious woman who aspires to one day be, as she would put it, the second black female president.
Mm-hmm.
She is basically using Troy to get her way to the top. She often has insecurities about her very dark skin, and she does stuff like wear weaves and lighten her skin to be more mm-hmm. accepted by white people.
So, Jonavi, I'm going to bounce to you now. Can you tell me a tiny, tiny bit about Joelle?
Joelle is Sam's best friend in the series. She is I believe she studies neuroscience. She is like kind of mostly a supporting character, I believe, in season one.
Yes.
She's always there in the recording area with Sam, providing a lot of like emotional support, and you know
she got some good clapbacks.
Yeah. Also speaks her mind, not as outspoken as Sam per se, but also you know, a confident woman, sure of herself.
Mm. So the last character in the main cast I'm going to talk about, because it's the one I get to talk about, is Gabe. he's the only white person in the main cast. He plays Sam's love interest and ends up playing a pretty important part in sort of one of the main points of the show. But basically, he offers a white perspective on these issues as someone who is trying to be an ally. Most of the show is not from a white perspective at all. So it is kind of it's not a bottle episode, but it is. It does have a different tone because it's looking at things from that perspective where everybody, you know, Sam is mixed race, lighter skin, Joelle and Coco are darker skin. You got all sorts of different shit. And it's a really smart way to do the show. So those are our people: Sam, Lionel, Troy, Coco, Reggie, Joelle, and Gabe. And this whole show, as Jonavi mentioned, starts with a blackface party, which is a big no-no. And it should go without saying it's a big no-no, but the people in the show don't know it's a no-no.
Unfortunately, people in real life don't know it's a big no-no. So we have
people have to keep
reminding white people. No.
We have to make a TV show about it. So Dear White People, the radio show run by Sam, addresses this and causes a lot of controversy. And the whole show discusses like a lot of unrest on the campus as people are confronting these sort of ugly truths about how deep prejudice goes within this supposedly tightly knit community. Probably one of the biggest incidents within the show belongs to Reggie, where they're at a party and A white person is singing along with a song and saying the N-word in a song. Something I would be mortified to do. To a point where I was uncomfortable watching the show, and I'm like, ooh, okay, this is why people make a big deal out of it. Because, like, it's even something like, even, like, what, Scrubs is one of my favorite shows. That's, like, the first joke in the show, Scrubs, is the white character asking the black character if he can say it in a song. And the black person is like, no, no, you can't. And this show escalates that moment into something really intense, where the person doesn't want to back down when Reggie says, hey, could you please not say that word? I would, like, really appreciate it.
Yeah, quick aside, I really like how, like, naturalistic that moment felt, where, like...
It did!
Reggie's, you know, he's politely like, hey, can you not do that? And the white dude's like, why not? And he's getting super defensive. It's like, it ain't cool, right?
Right. And then he escalates it into, like, are you calling me a racist? I'm not a racist. So it goes into the whole, like, larger thing of, like, hey, people... Like, if you point out racist behavior in somebody, even if you don't say, hey, you're a racist, they'll immediately, like, go to, oh, like, are you calling me a racist? Mm-hmm. Do you think I'm racist now? When, in fact, I'm sure that since it's implied that Reggie and this dude were, like, you know, friends.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, this guy a little bit racist. But spoiler alert, he probably thought all white people are a little racist anyway. I don't know. That felt like an important moment to me of just, like, you're not willing to say... Okay, I'm gonna listen to you. I'm going to say, no, this is now about me because you're hurting my feelings by implying that I am racist.
A really deft, like, sharp way to portray that particular issue, because it all happens so quickly. And what ends up happening is the guy gets, like, so uptight about, like, being called out on this that he starts to, like, yell, and then someone calls the cops. And the cops invariably point a gun at Reggie because he's escalating the situation. And that...
It wasn't even the cops. It was campus security.
It was like campus police, yeah. Campus security.
Who are armed with guns, you know?
Given some things that have happened in our society over the last couple of years, it like, felt so hard to watch that moment. And I couldn't look away, not because it was, like, a train wreck is happening, but, like, it was so... I can't believe the show did such a good job of showing the complexity of these issues in such a short moment. And that basically fuels the rest of the show. Because there's a reveal that Gabe, the ally, is the one that called the police because he was worried. And he didn't think about what it would do to Reggie. He didn't think about what it's like to be a black person in this context and have law enforcement called upon you. So Sam ends up, like, hooking up with Reggie. And there's a great song about nipples. The whole show ends with a town hall protest. Season one ends with Lionel basically revealing that the school wants to integrate Armstrong Parker with other non-minority houses. Troy gets sick of being, like, the good boy, and he smashes a window. And Sam and Gabe are, like, on totally different pages because of the split over Reggie and, like, the cheating and, like, Sam not forgiving Gabe for calling the police. And it's all about the characters. Like, this plot is seems messy when I lay it out there, but it seems so clean and structured when you're looking at it through the eyes of these characters, which is what each episode does.
Yeah, each character has a very clear and defined arc, which is definitely a bit difficult to do, I think, in a lot of cases where you have kind of a pastiche format of, like, hey, we're gonna follow a cast of characters, because, I mean, someone ends up usually gets shafted.
Pastiche is a good word. The show is considered a satire, and it has a very sarcastic tone. Giancarlo Esposito's narrator is, like, dripping with sardonic wit every time he speaks. Every episode ends with people staring into the camera. Every time they show the campus, everybody, like, you know, those pictures you'd see in a college brochure with people, like, on the grassy hill enjoying school. They're all just, like, staring at the camera with deadpan faces. It's sharp writing. It's inclusive. It's got it definitely jumps between different perspectives. And I think that just from a storytelling standpoint, that is pretty impressive. But that's a brief summary of the first season of Dear White People. I'll talk about it a little more in the discussion, but Faith, the person I partnered with for this episode, didn't want to talk about this show. She didn't have a specific show she wanted to talk about, but she has a strong passion for talking about oppressed communities and how people can support and align with them. And I think Dear White People does such a good job of showing this issue not from, like, a heavy-handed sort of, like, life is hard for this one group of people, just align with them. It shows you so many different areas of the problem, what's wrong with each perspective.
Yeah, like, what is absolutely fantastic about this show is that it shows how racism can affect people differently, how yes. everyone's experience with it is different, and thus how they see the problem, how they see the solution to it mm-hmm. is different, and how that can oftentimes butt heads with each other. But ultimately, it shows everyone as human, mm-hmm. flawed, and trying their best to like keep their head above water.
Yes.
Like characters you would think are assholes, like Troy, Coco, or Muffy, eventually get a moment to go, oh, I get what they're about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even like the Dean, who for most of the show is like depicted as this uptight, who gave up his blackness for like a seat of power, but then we see why he is the way he is. He's, you know, trying to help protect his son. And oftentimes when like these kinds of shows are written, it's very I was gonna say black and white, but
right, like there's, because you have like a pastiche of characters and like, you know, more or less everyone has a thing that follows them, it's very easy to sort of paint people into a corner or a stereotype, which is, you know, the whole kind of the whole point of shows like this. You don't want to portray people as a stereotype.
The show does such a good job of taking those stereotypes and presenting you with them, and then coloring in what makes those beliefs true and what is behind those experiences. And yeah. I think that it's portrayal of like mutual empowerment and like seeking to understand is just, it's something I don't see very much, and I really wanted to take the time to talk about it. So that's what we're talking about. Let's move on to the domains. Here in the domains, we are going to hear what our representatives have brought that they think relates to this before we talk about it all. Chatter, you're first. You're talking about Miss Marvel. Ms. Marvel. Why don't you give me a little heads up as to what the situation is, Rahir?
All right. So the original character, Carol Danvers, currently Captain Marvel, she's a character who exists in the Marvel Universe. Miss Marvel is about this character named Kamala Khan. One day she's coming home from a party, and this mysterious gas called Terrigen Gas, which is involved in a different comic story.
It has to do with the Inhumans, right?
Yeah. It has to do with the Inhumans.
This is all Marvel comics, people. So it's batshit.
But like, what you need to know is basically the Terrigen Gas turned Kamala Khan into an Inhuman, and she now has superpowers. Those superpowers shapeshift, akin to something like what Mr. Fantastic or Plastic. You know? She can grow bigger, she can stretch, she can shrink, all that stuff. And why I chose Miss Marvel is because she is a first generation immigrant, was born to like Pakistani parents who came to America and was born in America. And that is the immigrant experience is of like Asian people, particularly brown Muslims, I feel is not discussed enough. So that was one reason I picked her. And another reason is because like how it depicts her is absolutely fantastic. Like when I read the first volume, I was just sitting there going, yes, I feel the exact same way. Like, it is so nice to like be able to like really relate to someone, like, because there are lots of moments, like for example, she like makes a small joke about her own culture, right? And then like all her white friends start to feel like, oh, she made a joke, now it's okay for us to just completely make fun of that, like how Pakistani culture can be very regressive when it comes to treatment of women, how American culture is very racist to brown people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very intersectional story about being a brown person, being an immigrant, being a woman, and I guess I wanted to talk about it because I think it much like Dear White People, it shows this character as human. It shows how she is persevering through these struggles, and you know how the people around her deal with that kind of stuff too.
Yeah. So I don't. This is my first hearing about Kamala Khan. I didn't know anything about this character really, aside from you mentioning it to me before recording. And I know the Inhumans proper is like a whole long, like crazy series of stories about the Kree who changed these people, and like, yeah. Does Kamala Khan have any sort of like team or compatriots from within the Inhumans lore or story, or is she kind of like on her? I'm wondering if she has any sort of like support, sidekick,
yeah,
anything
she,
like that.
Yes, she does. in the beginning, she is interacting with crap, I forget her name. The lady with the really long hair.
I know who you're
Rapunzel.
Talking about. Yes, Rapunzel, the Medusa. That's
Medusa. There we go. Yeah. And like, you know, she gets like a giant teleporting dog who basically becomes her pet, and that's
gotcha. As that's as awesome. You do,
you know, later on she becomes a part of the Avengers and she meets other characters like Miles Morales and Ironheart, mm-hmm. Thor, you know, all of them, and so on top of all of that, it's also very much a inspirational story about, you know, someone you normally don't get to see in this position become like something bigger than life, so a superhero, you know.
That's fantastic, dude. Thank you. That was I know I didn't talk a lot during that. I was having honestly a lot of fun listening to that. I enjoyed it. But like a little side note, we're absolutely doing an episode on Into the Spider-Verse when it comes out, right?
Yes,
like that course. Like that has it to happen, right?
So, oh my god,
oh my into fucking
the
god
into the Spider-Verse,
it's beautiful vibe. It's so gorgeous. I saw a trailer for it in IMAX. That upside down shot of him like falling up into the city.
Oh my god! I want that on my wall. Jesus.
Oh, it's so good. Okay, cool. Anyway, we're gonna move on now. hold on, let me clean up my little workstation here that got messy. So. are going to move on to Genevieve. So, Genevieve, the first thing you're representing as a proper member of this podcast cast, the podcast cast, is Get Out. I feel like a lot of people might not know about this film. Why don't you fill us in?
Sure. So, Get Out...
That's a joke. It's very successful.
...is a film that actually came out the same year that the first season of Dear White People came out, about, like, a month earlier, which I thought was interesting timing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a horror satire film by Jordan Peele, directed by him, about a black man with a white girlfriend who is not what she appears to be. And on an ill-fated trip to go see her parents, it turns out that our main character is actually becoming embroiled in this like very freaky plot to place his control of his body and like a lot of his mind by a white person. In the course of the film, it turns out to be one who wants his eyes and wants his like artistic perspective, because
mm-hmm.
he's a very successful or like a very gifted photographer. Mm-hmm. So
a white person wants his perspective,
yes,
but doesn't want to actually look at what it's like to be him.
Exactly.
It's so interesting.
And also during the whole like garden party thing, in which, as we come to know, all of the guests are effectively like bidding on, you know, who gets to have like the body of this man. It's, you know, very reminiscent of, you know, slaver auctions and stuff. So that there's a lot of other things that are symbolically very clever about it. It does have a happy ending. I don't think it was originally intended to.
No,
I think no. I would more describe it as a sort of bittersweet ending, but I'll get into that in the
discussion. in a horror film, I feel like you escape is a happy ending.
That's about as happy as it gets.
For the genre, yeah. I would say it counts as a happy ending.
The last line in the film is, "I'm the motherfucking TSA. We handle shit."
Yeah.
I think that's about as happy as you can expect from literally, like, lobotomizing people and replacing their consciousnesses.
Yeah, yeah. But there's like, an element to Get Out that I think contrasts my domain, and that was something I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a bit.
Yeah.
Genevieve, why did you choose this particular thing? What made you want to go with Get Out as your domain when talking about Do White People?
Well, Dear White People has a lot of satire in it. Get Out has a lot of satire in it. But I was also very into how these things that are often seen as like relatively benign by a lot of white people are in fact like extremely insidious and troubling.
Yes.
And the fact that Get Out highlights some of those things so well, especially the way that it like horrifies appropriation and like
horrify. I like
oh,
that.
Oh, hey, telling stories or like
horrified.
Hey, I like the way in which like people who, you know, will present themselves as like, oh no, yeah, like we're super liberal and progressive. They really just want to take stuff from you. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that like as a brown person, I was a little bit wigged out going back to like a primarily white environment after seeing this. it was a little real for me.
I laugh nervously and guiltily.
Like I walked out of that movie like legit scared, like fuck.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm sorry, everybody. I didn't mean to be this way.
Because the way that I feel like a lot of what Get Out says and the perspective that it shares, like it does translate a good bit to like other minority perspectives as far as like, oh, this story is very compelling, like I'm gonna enjoy the story and then go back to like not considering or thinking about it at all because I don't have to live like that. I don't think that a lot of people understand the apprehension that like minorities have when you know, trying to live in and participate in the world, and like try as you might to put aside your, you know, misgivings about the people around you, you're gonna be disappointed kind of frequently.
Yeah.
Like even if people have the best intentions, or some of them might just like present as having the best intentions but in fact they don't, it becomes very, you know, messy and scary and convoluted in your head sometimes. Yeah. So I felt like Get Out did a great job of sort of like presenting this in a clean and interesting way.
Like Get Out does a wonderful job of like creating this sense of like all eyes are on you. Like even when you're just trying to blend in, everyone's just like looking at you. And the truth is that really is what it is like to be black or brown or Asian or whatever minority in a society. You just like it just seems like you're under a microscope at all times, and it's
It goes back to the thing of like, if you are, you know, the token minority in your school or in your place of work, whether you like it or not, you are kind of representative to a lot of people. It's, you know, like it kind of sucks, even though, you know, that's not your job and you shouldn't have to be, but so
I picked a strange episode for a podcast where I'm supposed to make jokes, because I can't do that right now. Chowder, you're eyeing me so hard. You're trying to get me kicked off the internet, Chowder. I don't like it. I don't like it. Stop it.
Oh, are you feeling oppressed, Colin?
Oh, now you know how I feel, Colin.
Guys, it's like I'm recording this podcast under a microscope. I'm not representative of all white people. All right, now, one little brief testimonial about Get Out. I might cut this out of the show. I just got to say this. Is like, I was, before I had seen the movie, I was hanging out with some of my friends at work, and someone said like, yeah, it's basically a commentary on liberal racism. And another one of my very like outspoken white friends, who is like, considers himself an ally, they were like, liberal racism isn't a thing. And I was like,
I am mean mugging that Brandon. I don't even know what he looks like.
Oh, we gotta talk about this. Oh no.
Yes, please tell me about all of your feelings about how you are unfairly called a racist. I'm very interested.
Oh yes, please. Just because you can't say the words in the song that you want to say. All right, cool. That's going to wrap up the domains. Let's push forward on to the discussion.
Like, I want to tell you about, like, the silly context in which I saw Get Out, but, like, I don't know how to fit it in. But, like, when I saw Get Out, it was at my college at, like, a sort of a movie night with, like, a panel discussion after, right? So I went to that movie night, went to the panel discussion, right? And after that discussion, it was the opening night of Black Panther. And I went to see Black Panther with you guys. Yes. Oh, man. Like, Get Out and Black Panther back to back.
You're not feeling great about white people.
Nah.
I'm not saying you do anyway, but we took a big plunge after those 2 days.
Oh, no, my white cred.
I'm working so hard to maintain my societal advantage.
Oh, we know.
So we're in the discussion now, as you can most certainly tell by the fact that we're discussing things. And I want to kick this off by talking a little bit about why this is the topic we chose for this episode. So when I reached out to Faith, who won our raffle for listener selection, she did not suggest any particular domain of geek culture, but instead kind of expressed to me her passion around various injustices happening in high-profile terms across the world against minority communities. Obviously, there are lots of conversations we can have about what we're going to do in America, but we don't want to piss off all our listeners. So, and I've already laid out a minefield, so I'm going to be a little careful about that for the moment. We'll get around to that later. But basically, she sent me a couple videos about some basically just like handshot videos, not even like professional news footage, of riots in the UK, specifically surrounding the fact that Muslim people had moved into predominantly, you know, like white European neighborhoods. And mostly what she wanted to focus on was not the oppression being displayed in this situation, but rather the instances where the people facing mutual oppression or people identifying with those who did coming to each other's support and like helping them out of difficult situations with people surrounding them or standing with them, holding signs, or just making sure that they weren't alone in these situations. And it was a little tough for me to find a topic that I knew well enough to bring to the show that I thought talked about this. So I chose Dear White People because this is a geek podcast and we want to talk about shows and stuff we love. And I think that when we're talking about real world situations that are happening that people do feel strongly about, Dear White People is one of the shows that has allowed me to connect with those kinds of perspectives that I don't hold myself. So the first question I want to ask sort of on that is, I want to ask you guys, each of you, do you think that Dear White People succeeds in representing and educating about the struggles of minorities as a whole? Do you think that maybe it's the conversation is too specific to the struggles of Black people in America? Could it be used more broadly? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or how your domains might tie into it too.
Yeah, I guess I have some thoughts on that, on how it succeeds. I think it does. I think it succeeds very well, because like I said before, it humanizes these characters, but it also like shows like the complex web and details of how oppression functions. Like in season two, there's this argument between Sam and Gabe that they're having, you know.
That was such a good fucking episode,
right? Basically Gabe is, you know, trying to like understand why what he is doing is wrong. Like, to him, he's making a documentary to help these people. So they get into the detail of like the difference between profiting off like other people's misery and like actually trying to help them, white guilt, and actually doing something about that guilt instead of just like being like, my thoughts and prayers to you, and then nothing else. Mm-hmm. I think in that regards, the way it humanly portrays these characters, it succeeds. When season two ended, I'm starting to fear that like they may like devolve into the, like this sort of conspiracy thriller kind of thing, which I can't help but feel like takes away from the very naturalistic portrayal of like how oppression is ultimately like this difficult to define and different for everyone kind of thing, that ultimately everyone has different perspectives on what the solution is, and that's why it's so hard to fight, because ultimately there's no white people Illuminati that's controlling all the racism. There's no body of slay, you know.
There is a racism factory and they give out one racism per person.
Yeah,
and we need to shut it down.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say that there are like groups of powerful people, all of whom sort of hold a similar perspective on the issue.
Yeah, so definitely.
As far as like how conspiracy theory it gets, obviously we have no way of knowing, but I think that like alluding to like a conspiracy theory is a good way to sort of like have a narrative shorthand for like, hey, like these are the motivations of people who actually have a lot of power and influence in the things that affect everyday people.
Yeah, that's true. Like, mm-hmm. make no mistake, there are people who benefit from systemic racism and who pay a lot of money to make sure those imbalances are in place. But it's not so much an Illuminati masterminding the whole thing so much as it is a bunch
people
of
in plain sight
a bunch of rich assholes
who like basically promoting entrenched values instead of allowing things to change.
Yeah,
sure.
assuming that they would.
So, and as for like Dear White People and how it depicts different kinds of perspectives and if it depicts enough of them. Okay, so this is sort of a weird, complex thing because like its goal is to depict black culture and like the specifics of black culture, the different intersectionalities within black cultures. So in that regards, it does that well. You know, it depicts what it's like to be a gay black man, what it's like to be interracial, dark skin, what have you. And I feel like oftentimes in these discussions of race, it's always a matter of black people and white people and never really considers how their races factor in. But I don't think that's a fault of Dear White People. I just wish like the conversation would include more than just that, because
yeah,
the way racism works, it's like this totem pole where you know, white men are on top and then everyone else is like dealt out privileges so that they all squabble with each other, you know, like lighter skinned Asians are above darker skinned Asians, black men are above black women, that kind of
You're making me feel very self-conscious about the format of this entire podcast right now.
Well, I guess sort of like going off of that, I think that one of the ways that Dear White People succeeds very much is in that it deals very specifically with the struggles of Black America.
Right, the Black diaspora.
And the different thoughts and perspectives that like therein. And a lot of the like little satirical touches and the like the perspectives themselves are very focused on like the Black experience. But as far as like the global like racial conflict and like just general minority situations, I feel like it is a little bit hard to pick out like a lot of concrete instances in Dear White People, which are just like, oh yeah, like say a transgender woman living in Oman, for instance, might be able to also relate to, because a lot of it is so culturally embedded. But like,
yeah.
I think it kind of like does help and contribute to like the general issues about supporting minorities is that it does go a long way in very much humanizing each character and like about what motivates them. It does kind of help teach in a way like the viewer to sort of like look below the surface of a first impression of just yeah. like, mm-hmm. oh, this person is acting in this way. They must be like yeah. a character like this. But so I think that in the way that it sort of like goes to lengths to show you like, hey, what are these people motivated by? Like, what are these very human motivations that yeah. drive like these characters that, you know, I don't get to see in real life all the time. I can at least get a sense of it from watching this. And I think that sort of thought process of like, hey, what has been in this person's experience that has them behave the way they do? And I think that that is perhaps the biggest general takeaway of like, hey,
yeah, I can speak to that
for this.
Yeah, like, I can speak to that pretty personally too, as a white person watching this show. I mean, I try my best to be understanding and a good ally, but there are certain perceptions I'm never going to understand because I don't have them. And I think what struck me so much about the show is how easily it was able to convey to me these other perspectives in ways that weren't like that didn't feel preachy, that didn't feel heavy-handed, and it's made it the show has made it easier for me to consider not just black perspectives, but perspective of friends going through hard times I can't consider. Friends who are discovering their sexuality and like looking for ways to talk about it. Where it's just, it's given me a tool to sort of remove myself from my perspective because it discusses how that perspective relates to other people's just in ways I hadn't considered.
Yeah.
And I chalk that up as much to its intelligent writing as I do to its deft handling
for sure.
Yeah, complex subject matters. But to, I guess as far as translating this show's message and experiences to other cultures, how do you guys think each of your domains and how they discuss these issues, how well do you think those can be translated when compared to Dear White People?
Sure. So I suppose I feel like, I think I mentioned this a little bit in my summary, but I do feel as though Get Out resonates with like many specifically racial minorities, as far as
particularly Black people, obviously.
Yeah, particularly Black people. But it can. I think that a lot of the feelings and fears of Get Out can, to some extent, be mapped onto other racial minorities as well. Like specifically about the relationship with like the liberal white person, like liberal racism. So I thought it did a good job sort of dealing with that. It is also kind of a specifically American story in how it's culturally framed in a lot of ways. So, I mean, I think that what perhaps the kicker for Get Out is, though, is because it is simply a lot more uncomfortable in many ways. And because of the level of like visceral uncomfort it inspires, it just makes it automatically a bit less accessible than something like a satire that is not a horror. Yeah. So I think it kind of gets a little bit up in your face more, which is a mixed bag as far as how people are going to perceive it, which I think is a lot of the point of the movie, but
Chatter, what have you got?
I think first of all, I think it's always hard to figure out like what the influence of any piece of media has on the cultural discourse, simply because art can change the world, but it's in the long and slow process as opposed to something snappy. But Miss Marvel, there's the obvious ways in like how they use the character to like try to motivate change in the world, like how they had the character, you know, promote people going out to vote and like teaching about voting rights and such. Then there's the more the subtle ways and like how they show like the struggles of this character and like the struggles she has balancing her home in America and like her own family and her own culture. And like the important takeaway that Miss Marvel makes, and it's, I think, an important one, is you don't have to compromise between being accepted by your country and being accepted by your people. You don't have to feel like an outsider to America. You don't have to feel like an outsider to
your community, your
own people, your community, your family, your race. And that is a really important thing, because like a big part of the immigrant experience is just like never feeling like you belong anywhere. Like the country.
I'm half Canadian. Believe me, I understand.
Like the country.
Like you're being a bad Indian, or like you're being a bad
exactly.
Canadian. I've already said that. Please respect my heritage.
Mm.
too far. Did I go too far? I went too far. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So ultimately, Miss Marvel is, you know, a superhero story of like someone shining bright, and like it's wonderful because kids don't get to see that kind of stories about people who look like themselves, and so being told you can shine bright, you can make the change you want to see in the world, and that you don't have to make sacrifices or personal you don't have to make sacrifices doesn't quite ring right, but you get the gist, right?
Compromises.
You don't have to compromise your identity. You can be all the things.
Yes.
Dear White People, as a satire, has a very like sharp, sardonic sense of humor. I found that this like immediately looped me in. I think that the show's very like witty, Sorkin-esque writing is not quite as refined as Sorkin, but like that same sort of like sharp, refined dialogue really roped me in. But like looking at it at a deeper level, having seen both seasons of the show, do you think that that tone helps or hurts the overall delivery of the message?
I think it helps. Like a big thing about Dear White People is it is for adults. It is for people who can handle the very complexities and nuances that...
Which is ironic because it's following a bunch of like 21-year-olds. I think that's brilliant.
All the complexities and nuances it is thrown at. That sort of cynical look on the world is important because, you know, a lot of people are very naive about the state of things. You know, like people are recently going, this is not the America we know, about things like...
Right, or like...
separation of parents and children.
The whole not my America thing is a little bit like fraught with this kind of perspective void.
Almost like saying like America was never like this, and this show is like very clearly saying like it has
America has always been like this, and that is something important to discuss.
Yeah, like, and it's good to say that's bad, but it's not good to be like, oh no, it's only bad now with this one thing that happened. It's very like, no, that's not how it go.
Yeah exactly. An important part of like making that change in the world is understanding that history and how that past echoes into the present and will continue on into the future unless something is done. And yeah, so that sardonic sense of humor is very important, as well as like Get Out's cynicism, because Get Out ends with like, you know, we have our protagonist like over the body of like a white woman he just killed. And then we see a police car, headlights come on.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, we're like, and like, Christ, that moment just,
yeah,
it's like ice water in the veins. Like, because we all know.
Because we know what that means.
Yeah. And I think it is like sending a very important message. He might have gotten out of that particular situation, but he still has to return to a country.
A world in which he, like, is always on the losing end.
Yeah.
A country that would try to have him executed, that would try to have him owned. That is in stark contrast to something like Miss Marvel, which is superheroes are ultimately a fairy tale, you know? Do this, do the right thing, and
sure,
you live happily ever after. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're Infinity War, but that's the, fine. So I think part of the success of Dear White People as a piece of fiction and as a piece of entertainment is that in discussing all this very heavy, charged information, it does such a good job of focusing on the characters and writing them out and making them believable, fully realizing them to the point where these struggles aren't just things they're teaching you about. You feel connected to the people who say they're experiencing them in this fiction. And I don't think the show could succeed without that. I think a lot of things, and like, I'm a big fan of Star Trek, and Star Trek has always been like very preachy, but when it fails to connect you to people in instances, it fails to make you care about the point. And Dear White People, I think, does that very well. So I do want to ask you guys, and feel free to dive into this, of the characters that we have, Sam, Troy, Reggie, Joel, Gabe, all of them, which one do you think you identified with the most and why?
Honestly, what's coming to me right now is Reggie's whole deal of like, for most of your time in a school setting, you know, you've been kind of an outsider. Then you feel like you've kind of found your tribe, and then you feel like, oh, well, it's not all going your way, and you're very upset about that, to a somewhat, like, you can consider how valid his reactions are to, you know, not being,
yeah,
you know, accepted by Sam or whatever, and that's a little bit of a separate mine hole, or
mine hole.
Rabbit hole? Rabbit hole.
Rabbit hole.
Exploding rabbit hole. But anyway, and then to be in a position where, okay, even, like, after you've gone through all of this, you're having an emotional thing, then to be in the situation where you have a near-death experience in which you were powerless, and your powerlessness becomes, like, extremely visceral in that moment, and where, like, even though, hey, you got out of that situation and, like, you know, you're still alive, you're now just left with this, like, resounding sense of powerlessness. And I feel like that, like, feeling of like anger and frustration and like, I don't even know how to like process this, and the way in which he's shown trying to process this is like, I think that resonated with me, because
yeah,
like, to varying degrees, I think everyone has felt powerless at some point, but having that specific...
My cats stare me down every day, and
exactly,
I know I have no control in my apartment.
But having, like, that specific instance of, like, powerlessness and the specificness of that story, like, I thought that was really powerful. It was like a good,
yeah,
depiction of like, this is why people are so mad. Like, I don't think that, like, it baffles me sometimes how sometimes it seems like a lot of people don't understand this. It's just, even if it doesn't happen to anyone in your community, this happens somewhere, and like people get very up in arms about it, because you are taking away someone's like life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for the space of time where you decide that like a situation warrants you using like a lethal threat to get compliance. So that was
a fantastic answer. Chowder, step up to the plate. Who you got?
How is that fair? Okay.
This is not how I'm going to determine who gets the Gold Star Student Award.
I suppose mine is sort of a combination between Lionel and Coco. Lionel in the sense that we're both these like very shy, very quiet, introverted kids who dealt with a lot of bullying for like not living up to the standards of being men. I feel that also we're both like stupid fucking nerds who have no social understanding. So I feel that too. And another thing I feel about Lionel is the sense of betrayal. Like in season two, we find out that Silvio is a piece of shit.
We find out that his gay minority Latino boyfriend / hookup is this like racist alt-right troll.
Yeah. And like, I have like,
that was such a fucking, man, that threw me for a loop.
That caught me off guard hard.
Yeah, it did. And it made so much sense.
And like in my own life, I have like felt that sense of betrayal with others, whether it be family or just people I looked up to. Like, for example, this guy, this game developer named James Portnow that I really admired, turned out to be a piece of shit who harassed his girlfriend out of her job. Ex-girlfriend harassed his co-workers and employees, whatever. All right, so the other half of that is Coco, and I relate to her because like she suffers through this sort of like a cocktail of like self-resentment and like high ambition, and like there are a lot of parts of my life where I dealt with that resentment of myself, resentment of like how I look, and like wishing I were somebody else. And like through all that, I also want to achieve all these things that I feel are out of my reach, and I totally get her struggle with that. So yeah, that is how I relate to these characters.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
My character that I relate to most is Coco, because damn, I have a hard time getting my hair right in the morning. I'll let you guys take a guess as to who I'm gonna pick.
Oh, gee. Oh, man.
Can you guys figure it out? It's
Muffy. It's totally Muffy.
It's Muffy because I just get really up in arms when my dog escapes.
Nah, more serious answer, Kurt. Let's stop being around the bush.
Well, not anything I said my piece. I think that for me, the episode that just made everything click together was episode 7 of season 1, which was Gabe's episode, where it takes all these like thoroughly discussed things and then, hey, Colin, here's the perspective that you understand more directly. And I was like, thanks, TV show. You made this easy for me. You did all the hard work. I don't have to think on my own. But also, it was just, I thought it was a very funny episode. I have various anxieties when it comes to social interaction, various neuroses that impact a lot of my personal relationships. So just, it also happens that the portrayal of Gabe's paranoia about Sam and Reggie was like spot on to just how I feel interacting with a lot of people, and I'm glad that they did it the way they did, because that's where that nipple song comes in. It was one of the funniest goddamn parts of the show, where it's like he's in the middle of class and he starts thinking about like Reggie and Sam together, and it just says, he's gonna lick her nipple. And it just keeps cutting back to that, and it's just,
oh no,
it's such a perfect moment of levity for such a hard conversation. So Gabe, obviously, for the show, translating it to my perspective, but there were some things about that character unrelated to the race issues of the show that I think I connected to. We're almost out of time in the discussion, but what we do about every Monday, we put out a post on Facebook letting you know that we're about to record an episode, and we ask for questions. So you can submit a question if you feel strongly about a topic or you want us to talk about something. And we do have one this episode. It is from Brian Mossbarger from before he was on the show. But I kind of do like how this has turned in a way for us to ask questions when we're not on an episode. I dig that. I didn't mean for that to be what happened. But Ryan asks us, and I'm glad that we've all seen season 2. I did not know that going into the recording. The show does a really good job of dropping you into each character's unique perspective and allows you to easily empathize with their position. Through watching the second season, has there been anything shown that has changed your perspective on an issue?
It seems like the show is trying to straddle like a national large-scale conversation and pair it with the individual experiences of these characters. So it seems to be shifting to a larger dialogue about like media and like what motivates people to listen to what and stuff like that. So
it's meta.
So I think that little bit of like meta-ness and this gradual transition into like what makes people pay attention and like how can I manipulate that either for me or like for my cause is a very interesting
thing to me.
That is cool. Yeah, that's the thing I tend to, especially someone trying to run a podcast, trying. That's something I think about pretty frequently. Chatter, do you have anything that grabbed you and really shook it up a bit?
The you know, that argument between Sam and Gabe I was talking about, that was in season 2.
Yeah.
That got me to introspect a little about my own beliefs, about my own if I actually do enough or if I'm just all talk and no walk, and also just if I may have just problematic beliefs that I never really thought much about, because ultimately, like, nobody's immune to the very toxic mentality, and you know, like, while I may be a person of color, I also have lucked out in other regards. Like, I am cisgendered, I am male, I am straight, so, you know, I guess, like, ultimately, it definitely helped me, like, just understand myself just a little bit better, you know?
We're going to close out the podcast now. We're going to hop into the ratings section. So the first thing we do in the ratings is I have each of these representatives rate the topic on a scale of 1 to 5. And because of how much I enjoyed that nipple song, though, we're going to be rating this show on a scale of 1 to 5 paranoid fantasies. So Chowder, you're going to go first. How many paranoid fantasies would you award Dear White People?
I would award it 5 out of 5 paranoid fantasies.
Oh, God, are you okay, Chowder? Are you scared? Are you safe?
Let's not get into that right now.
You ready to record a whole other podcast? No. So why do you give it 5 out of 5? I'm not complaining.
It is absolutely wonderful. Like, because, like, you really get to know, like, this really large cast of very different people. And what I love most about it is how, like, all these people, they have identified the same problem, but their solution to, like, solving that problem is different. And that is very reflective of real life, where everyone's trying to, you know, everyone's trying their damn best, but, like, fuck, it's always hard to know what the damn right thing is. It depicts, like, all the complexities and humanity and nitwit and all other things.
All the true grit.
That is exactly. A different media piece.
That it is. You, he repped it
you
recently.
Made a,
I'm trying to
media joke. I see.
I did. I did. I tried to make a meta media commentative humor piece.
A reference, if you will.
Reference.
Like, I'm ultimately scared if, like, like, considering my reaction or my love of Black Panther as well, that, like, people will get the impression that, like, I'm just giving it brownie points for being progressive. But no, they are legitimately 5-star worthy, fantastic stuff. So, yeah.
Yep. 5. No, I think putting aside any of even, like, the commentative stuff of Dear White People, again, it is just well written, produced. It has a clear sense of style, direction, motion, and character that a lot of shows are lacking. So even just from a technical perspective, I think it excels. Jonavi, how many paranoid fantasies would you give this piece of work?
Dear White People is phenomenal.
Yes.
I must give it a 4.5 out of 5 paranoid fantasies. And the
half
reason
a paranoid fantasy.
I
where you start, but you're like, okay, no, just leave it alone, you shake it off.
The saving grace of, like, no imagination, just cutting that last paranoid fantasy in half. But anyway, the reason why I'm knocking off that last half is because during a lot of key, you know, episodes throughout season 1 and season 2, I was sometimes objecting to the use of, like, sexual relations as a, like, plot, as like kind of a weird obvious plot point and, like, just a stand-in and, like, quick shorthand for relationship or bonding. I wasn't a fan of that.
I think since we're dealing with a bunch of horny 21-year-olds, it makes a bit of sense, but...
I mean,
I think it just shows me being an ignorant man, so...
Well, I mean, and it's not just, like, necessarily a man or a woman thing. It's just, like, I think that a lot of times media in general is guilty of using, like, sex or sexual relations just to kind of be a little bit lazy about something or about, like, explaining or elaborating on something. Yeah. And because Dear White People does so many other things so well, it was just a little bit frustrating to be like, oh, okay, look, they doing the sexes because, like, this...
using your words exactly and just paraphrasing by squishing them together, I'm going to say you knock points off because of sexual frustration. Cool. Got that written down. Let's move on. So
you got me.
Now the last part of the ratings is where I award one of you a golden star for your contributions to the episode. I have my own criteria. And this week, the golden star. Now, in episode, I believe it's episode 2 of season 1, Lionel, who has a big fro, goes through a little journey of self-discovery and takes some clippers and shaves off his afro, and then he's got a real nice short buzz cut. Looks good on it. So I'm awarding the golden clippers of self-discovery. So this week, the winner of the golden clippers of self-discovery, despite wonderfully insightful, personal, and thoughtful conversation from both of you, which I deeply appreciate, and thank you for not making me look like more of an asshole than I have made myself to be. I'm going to be granting this award to Taimul Chowdhury.
Woo!
Yes!
Very, very specifically, because I was looking to see what kind of comparisons and what kind of contrasts you would make between your domains and the topic. And I know we were a very topic-heavy episode this time, but I think when I asked some of the questions about translating things to different cultures, I think you hit on all three topics this week by talking about Kamala Khan versus the other two things, and specifically called yours out of the contrast. It was just, I'm not rating overall performance, but you checked the boxes I was looking for specifically. So thank you and well done to both of you.
Good shit, dude.
Delightful. I've stepped into no exploding rabbit holes, or so I think about myself.
And yet there are rabbit giblets all over the goddamn place.
Rabbit giblets. It's so dark. I don't want to clean them up.
You never want to clean anything up.
So that about wraps it up. Thank you for listening to the Common Geeky program. I am your host, Colin Ketchin, and you can find me at Sana Colin K on like Facebook and Twitter and Xbox and SoundCloud, and I haven't done anything on YouTube in a while, but I think I'm still there. I've been joined this week by...
Hey, I'm Taimul Chowdhury, or Chowder. You can find me on Twitter at Taimul Chowdhury. You can see how that's spelled in the description. yeah, there you go.
And...
I'm Jonavi. You can't find me. I'm unfindable.
Challenge fucking accepted.
You don't find Jonavi. She finds you.
I'm already in your house. Sorry. Now you can
Jesus find Christ! Me. How long have you been there?
I'm sorry the listeners won't be able to see that on camera. That was beautiful performance, sir. Well played. So next week, our episode will be hosted by...
It me.
It's Jonavi.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. It's going to be great. Oh, well, we're going to be talking about Inglourious Basterds, the 2009 Quentin Tarantino film, and the theme will be revenge stories.
That's beautiful. I'm so excited. Do you know who's on that episode with you?
It is Jeff and Keenan, I believe.
I was so hoping Keenan would be in it. Yes. This is perfect.
That sounds like an awesome episode. Like, it does. If I were on that episode, I'd be talking about a Korean film called Old Boy.
Old Boy is a good one. It's a good revenge story.
Yeah.
So be sure to tune in next Friday. It's going to be... Wait. Because this is airing on July 27th. Pat! So this is airing on July 27th, and then that's going to... Hold on, guys. Help me with math. This is going to be what, August 3rd is next? August 3rd would be a week after the 27th, right?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yes.
Let's go with that. I'm not pulling up my calendar. So tune in next Friday. If you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, at Geeking Program. where we put out, you know, calls for questions, and we let you know new episodes are coming out and stuff like that. Any engagement, such as sharing a post, tagging us, tweeting hashtag CGP, liking, commenting, whatever, it's all going to enter you into a raffle where you get to pick the topic for a future episode, just like Faith helped me out today. Faith, thank you so much for having a conversation with me and helping me laser in on what this episode was going to be. It was a delight speaking with you. And any of you have a chance of doing the same thing in the future. Otherwise, reviewing us on Apple Podcasts is critical to growing our show. And we'll read new reviews on the air, preferably 5 stars. But if you hate us, I'll just take any attention at this point.
Pay attention to us.
Anyways, thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, everything. And we'll talk to you next week.
Oh, hey, a rabbit lover.
Jesus Christ, Chowder.
Bye.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program is hosted by Colin Ketchin, joined by Taimul Chowdhury and Genevieve Iyer. This episode is sponsored by All the Rabbits That Live in My Neighborhood. No rabbits were harmed in the recording of this podcast. This show is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt, with this episode edited by me, Colin Ketchin, and featuring original music, also by me. Next week's episode about Inglourious Basterds is on its way, but in the meantime, anything that you can do to share this show will be rewarded by your raffle entry, but we always appreciate you spreading the word because we love hearing more from you and speaking about things that we enjoy. So we'll see you next week, and in the meantime, thank you for listening to this. It's one of the coolest things I think a show could ever do. And I think we all know who we can really thank here. And it's Star Trek for inspiring Justin Simmons to make such a socially commentative piece of work.
Of course, giving all the credit to the white people.
I mean, listen, we could talk about Deep Space Nine or Discovery if you would prefer. But Gene Roddenberry was a cokehead, so let's not get into that. Anyway.
Oh, I think that was a lot there. I'm sorry.
Oh, Genevieve. Oh, you're about to understand how deep the exploding rabbit hole of Star Trek goes.
I just want to point out how you ended a sentence with cokehead and then said, don't worry about it.
Anyway. What now?
An exploding rabbit hole is a thing I'm saying in my life from now on, for sure.